the MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to the MadTech Podcast, your weekly dive into the biggest stories in media, marketing, e-commerce, and today, the music industry. I'm John Still, Head of Content at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined by ExchangeWire Research Lead, Matt Broughton. Matt, welcome.
Hi, John. Pleasure to be here.
Always good to have you, Matt. Our special guest today is co-founder of the agency Carter, Tony Barnes. Welcome to the MadTech Podcast, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No, great to have you. Looking forward to a good discussion today. As I mentioned, we've got a bit of a music and gaming slant to today's podcast. For the latest on the DMA big tech regulations, check out yesterday's podcast special with Kieran O'Kane and lawyer Damien Gerardine as they look at the ramifications for ad tech. That will be on our feed wherever you find it. So on to today and our first story. We're going to look at AI and its ramifications for the music industry. Artists have slammed AI developers for using music without permission in a letter signed by Kacey Musgraves, Billie Eilish and many, many more. Hundreds of artists have signed an open letter from the Artists' Rights Alliance calling on AI tech developers to stop training copycat programs and using AI-produced sounds to dilute the royalty pools paid to artists for their work. Tony, I'm going to start with you. Does AI pose a threat to the music industry? It's a big question.
Straight in on the hot topic.
Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, look, it's a hugely exciting, complicated, scary, kind of amazing space. But does it pose a threat? Possibly, yes. But I mean, I always get more excited about the opportunity it provides. You know, this is AI is inevitable. It's here. It's permeating every part of our lives, not just within music. I think it's more interesting to, you know, to think about the ways that AI can be exciting for the industry. And I think it's always, it requires a mindset shift as well, right? I think if you look back through the history of music, through these big technological shifts, there's always been some reticence, there's always been a bit of fear. But, you know, music always is at the centre of these technological changes, basically. So, you know, you go back vinyl to tape and tape to CD, CD to digital downloads, downloading to streaming. You know, everyone feared the tape because it was going to, you know, because of the explosion of bootlegs and, you know, and then the digital download. When that came along, everyone was, you know, pirating music and there was a lot of fear and worry about this. And then streaming, it was like, oh, it's going to kill the music industry. But I think it just, you know, it always requires a kind of mindset shift. And each one of these kind of huge cultural technological shifts have taken us into a better place. And I've always been excited by these changes, basically.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's acknowledged in the letter that they've said that there can be huge creativity involved in the AI, but they've also described it in the letter as AI will set in motion a race to the bottom that will degrade the value of our work and prevent us from being fairly compensated for it. I suppose the concern here, Matt, is that streaming services, platforms will be flooded by AI-generated copies, which are very easy to make. And the questions lie around who they're being trained on, where the copyright sits for that work, and, yeah, like they said, the royalties for plays. How do you think it could shape a future of streaming in particular?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, and it's going to be so interesting to see how these various lawsuits and obviously action by the artists in this case, how that all really pans out. I think I agree in terms of there's such creative opportunities with AI that are unlocked, but I do worry in terms of a lot of generative AI platforms, not just in terms of the music industry, but it takes away a lot of the kind of more entry level roles and those around the periphery. So for example, you know, the graphic design elements, sound editing, voiceover work, that's all, you know, not necessarily under threat, but things that could be really, really impacted. And, you know, on that junior level, I got started in my career by basic SEO copywriting and basic copy editing. That's all stuff that a generative AI platform can now handle with ease. And we're already starting to see in many creative industries, you've got the likes of AI drafted and created introductions for Marvel Secret Invasion, although that was admittedly quite shit. And also, you know, we've got ads now being made by it. There's a recent Under Armour one, for example. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all develops. But, yeah, it's definitely a shift change.
Yeah, and, you know, Tony, you're at Carter now. That's, you know, that's you're the agency you founded, but your background's in the music industry, I believe. Is this a sea change unlike any you've seen before? I know you've touched on previous kind of fears the industry have had throughout technology, but is this different?
Yeah, I think so. I just think it's just the mystery around it, maybe. I think it's what makes it different. You know, if you think of going back to what I was saying earlier, the shift from physical to digital was a huge kind of shift, both in terms of consumption and in mindset, both of the consumer and the industry. But we came through that and got to a better place. And then I think the biggest change before AI was this shift between, when we went from digital downloads and physical into streaming, the mindset shift there was ownership to access, right? And that was, I think, the biggest change that the music industry has been through in terms of consumption. And again, for both the consumer and for the industry to get its head around. But again, we've ended up in a much better place. The music industry is earning more money than ever before. And so are the artists and songwriters. But I think AI presents, there's a fear factor there just because of the kind of mystery of where it could go. But I think it presents an amazing opportunity, and definitely on that kind of entry level, we're going to see an explosion of music creation. You know, if it would already become easier for people in their, kids in their bedrooms to sort of learn how to make music, it's now becoming infinitely easier for them. So I think, we'll see an explosion of AI generated supported music in the years to come. But actually, I think that will elevate and true artistry, both in terms of music creation and the live arena, which has come at the other side of the COVID years and is in an amazing health right now. But I think I really believe that AI is going to see, I think you may see DSPs like Spotify's and Apple's and the streaming services. I can see a world where music that's created by authentic, real artists and songwriters becomes more of a premium. I can see, the public wanting to listen to more music from authentic artists. So, I'm excited by it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the ease of creation, we had a bit of fun in the office here this morning and used one of the AI creation tools to make a snippet. Please listen to the end of the podcast where you can hear Digital Revolution and AdTech Rap in full. One last thing I want to pick up with you on this, Matt. The letter described the use of AI as predatory use of AI to steal professional artists' voices and likenesses. We've heard this a lot in the publishing industry, journalists wondering whether their work is used to train AIs and where that stands with their intellectual property. Do we think letters like this are just the calm before the deals start rolling in with music publishers, record labels, to license back catalogues for training, etc.?
Yeah, I think as long as the content used to train AI models is appropriately licensed and artists are getting fairly rewarded for their work, then I'm all for it. But it does need that more robust regulation in place at the moment. At the moment, it's a little bit of a Wild West free-for-all. And I'm sure that regulation will come in time. But it basically needs to get to the point that if an artist's song is used to train an AI model, then if that permission is either withdrawn or not given in the first place, then it should be able to be removed from the training model. And obviously, more importantly, any outputs used for it. Because obviously, when it comes to AI work, it can really open a can of worms. Say if artist B used music from artist A to create a song, and then artist C used artist B song, because it's been used by AI to make that subsequent one, AI work cannot be copyrighted. So in a sense, you're using the original work, but because the middle ground work was made using an AI platform, in terms of the copywriting, I don't think the laws and legislations have caught up to that yet. There's a really good article in Taste magazine earlier in the week, which basically discussed how Trader Joe's in the US is allegedly aggressively copying products from small independent food producers and selling them in the stores. The crux of the issue there is that food recipes cannot be copyrighted. So I think that could bring about an analogous situation in the music industry. if that regulation and the ways of withdrawing permission from music models isn't put in place.
Yeah, it's I mean, to put it short, it's a kind of worms at the moment, Tony, where we are with regulation and AI. You mentioned the ownership to access model that the music industry has undergone in the last 20 years, probably longer than that. Can you see the streaming platforms, the giants, making deals with these AI platforms, the generative AI platforms, to license material, to license artists' likenesses for training?
Yes, to an extent. I don't think they'll get into, I think, you know, using artists' likeness and using, you know, I think that's a really difficult area. Yes, the legislation, the laws need to change and will change. It's a classic case of music industry catching up. You know, this has happened through all of these kind of technological shifts. Whenever we go through these huge technological cultural shifts, you know, music is always at the forefront because music soundtracks our lives, right? Whatever we're doing, music is there, is the beat and rhythm to our life, basically. So when there's a huge technological shift like this, music's kind of at front and centre. And I don't think there's anyone out there trying to use AI tools to kind of bring down the demise of the global music industry. I think it's just about experimentation. And but as part of that, yeah, the laws and legislation will need to catch up, and that will happen. It's going to take a lot of time because the industry has an ongoing issue around consensus. There's so many rights holders, you know, labels, publishers, songwriters, PROs and what have you, that it will take a minute for there to be consensus around what those laws and regulations should be. That will come in time. But I think, you know, all of us will, platforms, the DSPs, the social platforms, labels, publishers, everyone will need to eventually embrace this territory and find the right way of making it work.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's an area that's a hot topic for us that we've spoken about a few times this year. And who knows, Tony, next time we invite you back, maybe my voice will be automated. Cool. On to our next story. So AI innovator Sudemi Hassabis has said that video games can boost creativity in the young. Sudemi told the BBC that gaming helped him become successful. He believes that children who game should be encouraged with their creative use of tech. Tony, I know that this is an area quite close to your heart, really, in terms of the gaming sphere and what creative gaming offers. And so what do you see as the benefits? We'll go on to the benefits for the advertising industry soon, Matt. But Tony, yeah, for you, what are the benefits of gaming and how can they really get involved in new stuff such as Minecraft, Roblox, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with Sir Dennis, for sure. You know, if you think about, I think in particular when we talk about the social or UGC gaming platforms like Roblox and Fortnite, Minecraft, you know, these are incredibly creative platforms. Roblox has 40 million plus games on the platform. 15,000 are being added every day, and that's essentially mostly just young people that are creating things, trying things, they're collaborating, you know, and they're publishing their works and learning at the same time. And then I just think of, I've got two young boys, and in their Minecraft days, you know, they'd be with their friends recreating our the town where we live, or if we've been to Euro Disney, they'd recreate Euro Disney or something like this, you know. But they'd do it in a collaborative way, and they'd be creating and making things on a daily basis. So I think, yeah, you know, just through my experience, and just if you look at the activity on the platform, the creativity is incredible. And and then if I think about Carter as well, ourselves, you know, we're 35 on the team. A good portion of the team are young creators from, you know, natives from these platforms. And there's so many amazing skill sets that are being developed. You know, we have world designers, 3D architects, virtual fashion designers, programmers, UI, and so forth. And these are essentially kind of passions that young people are, you know, skills and that they're developing as they're growing up, that companies like ourselves are now being able to turn into, you know, reasonably well-paid long-term careers, and we're really proud of that. So I'm absolutely 100% agree that the, you know, video game and particularly social and UGC platforms are really amazing places for kids to learn creativity.
Yeah, so, you know, Carter's, you're almost proof of concept for this. You've got young designers and people who have come in through a background in that kind of gaming and now forging careers. So, you know, interesting that it's shaping how the workforce in design and, you know, programming is really coming through. Matt, we've talked a lot this year about gaming. Gaming's one of our industry review pillars that we launched in January. It's huge for the ad industry. How have you seen that develop this year in terms of advertisers getting involved in gaming? What's been hot and what can it really offer the media industry as well?
Yeah, it's one of these conversations that has rumbled on for a long time. I think everyone's now recognizing and has acknowledged it's not just the, you know, young male demographic that, you know, really strict grouping as such. It's actually a really, really diverse audience. And I think there is that recognition of that. I think there are still challenges to overcome, you know, balancing ad loads with user experience, particularly in those environments that aren't yet necessarily yet accustomed to the higher ad loads. Obviously, mobile gaming, people are more accustomed to that. You have the rewarded video and rewarded aspects, whereas in things like more premium console games, it's a bit more nascent. But I think now, with obviously the deprecation of the third-party cookie, people are now looking more towards their creative in terms of advertising. And I think that can bring around a shift change in terms of, right, how can we dynamically alter a specific creative to run in a given game and actually be more in tune with that particular game's environment? And I think that will do wonders for advertising in gaming, because, like I said, there is just such a wide and diverse audience out there to be, you know, which is kind of undermarketed to at the moment. It's a real opportunity. And I think the conversation is getting there. And I think in the next few years, the tech tools will get there as well.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's you know, in terms of the demographics, we still have the old stereotypes that this is boys in bedrooms playing on video games, when in fact, games are mobile, games are interactive, games are for everyone. Tony, how do you see these, you know, the opportunities for not just creativity, but advertisers as well inside kind of the big platforms inside of gaming? How have you seen that shaped since Carter began?
Oh, yeah, it's massive. It's a, you know, I mean, advertising in video games has been around for many, many, many years now. But the new territory that we're in, particularly in the social gaming platforms, is about being able to create branded experiences. You know, that's the kind of work that we do. But, you know, so rather than just advertising the video game, a brand can create their own world or their own experience, their own shopping experience, their own immersive space, you know, where you could have players spending 5, 10, 15 minutes, you know, immersed in your own branded world as opposed to just advertising within it. So there's this hugely kind of emerging space. I think the number of brands that created their own experience on Roblox last year was over 500, you know, a couple hundred the year before. So it's early days, but growing. And then, yeah, that's totally supported by this kind of immersive advertising that you can now do with portal ads and video ads and the banner ads. And there's 3 billion plus gamers in the world. And if you're a brand, an IP owner, you know, any business that's looking to communicate, particularly with young people, then you need to have a strategy within the social gaming or UGC gaming space. And you're totally right on the audience. You know, Roblox is something like 46% female. There's platforms like Zepeto, which are about 70% female. It's a Southeast Asian-based platform. So, you know, that's really interesting for brands that are looking to sort of reach young females. And I really get excited by this, the idea around Gen Alpha, right, which is, you know, beyond Gen Z, we're into Gen Alpha territory, the largest generation in history. 2 billion young people born since 2010, so the oldest right now are 13 or 14. And they are all completely native to immersive platforms, immersive technology, you know, virtual worlds, social gaming. It is so completely normal to them, you know, to be building a virtual wardrobe or hanging out with their friends in virtual social spaces. So, you know, brands are obviously now recognizing this, and you know, so there was a piece by, I think, Metaverse Marcon that came out yesterday talking about this very topic, all eyes on the sort of gaming industry from brands, basically.
Yeah, it's
very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. I think it's, you know, a lot of, it's like I said, it's something that we've discussed in Industry Review. We see a huge potential in it, and we're hearing a lot about that across the industry. In terms of the metaverse, metaverses, you know, it's an area that you're deeply involved in. Sometimes it can feel that generative AI came over and kind of stole the Web3 thunder that was gaining momentum at the start of 2023. But obviously, it's not gone away. These platforms are still huge business. What's the state of the metaverse, metaverses, Web3 at the moment? How are you seeing stuff develop?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's the metaverse, I guess, of, you know, the original kind of, vision of the metaverse is we're not quite, you know, we're not there yet. I think it's an evolving kind of term, really. You know, when we talk about metaverse right now, we're definitely talking about social gaming. So your Fortnites, your Robloxes and your Zepetos, basically ecosystems of millions of different games and worlds that players or people can, travel through, spend time in, socialize, and I think that's an important point to make about the gaming space. It's not, you know, we're not talking about hardcore gaming. This isn't Call of Duty or you know, this is basically about where people spend their online time socializing, hanging out, making things, creating things, trying things, learning things, sharing. It's kind of life reflected in 3D, and right now that's in places like Roblox. Where it can go, who knows? But it's, you know, there's no doubt that we're all increasingly spending more time in virtual worlds, and there's an increasingly kind of blurring line. You know, go back to a young person's virtual wardrobe, which is a lot more colourful and creative and fun and interesting than the sort of, you know, the what they'll go to town with physically on a weekend. You know, that's just becoming part of normal life. If you're under 25, and you know, there's a huge amount of data and research around how not even your Gen Alphas, but your Gen Z kind of care more about what they're wearing in game than what they're wearing in real life. And you know, it's just this kind of, you know, we're just on this path basically. And will we ever get to, you know, the sort of Ready Player One vision of the metaverse? Who knows? But I think it's probably a blending of where we are now and you know, somewhere along that path, basically. But, and in terms of Web3, yeah, you know, the platforms that I'm talking about today are still Web2. I think the Web3 space is, again, inevitable, really exciting. I think we're already starting to get to a place where we're not talking about the tech, but we're kind of using the tech without needing to know how it works, or, you know, which I think is, if you look at the explosion of the internet originally, it went through, you know, a huge amount of challenges early on. You know, the famous article saying the internet was dead and what have you. But yeah, it got to a point where we, as Joe Public, stopped kind of trying to figure it out and how it worked. It was just, we started using it in our lives and on our websites and not on our phones and what have you. And I think the Web3 is just going to permeate into tech and into our lives in that kind of way, and we'll stop worrying about what it is and how it works, and we'll just enjoy, you know, it'll just be how we how platforms are built upon, basically.
Yeah, just plug in and enjoy the rides. Excellent, cool. Right, I'll move us on to our third story, which combines both music and gaming. It's almost as if we designed it that way. So Universal Music Group and Republic are launching Boombox Music Player on Roblox. Music Business Worldwide has reported that UMG and one of its frontline labels, Republic Records, has launched a new product in Roblox, which enables players to listen to music in-game. Boombox is described as an ad-supported portable music player embedded in Roblox, which allows labels to launch playlists and integrate them into the gaming space dynamically. So this nicely brings together both of the touch points we've talked today on the music industry's future and, of course, the popularity of gaming. And Tony, for transparency, I know you were involved in the creation of Twice Square. in Roblox. So this is a project very close to your heart. But I just want to kind of get your thoughts on the convergence of gaming and music, how important that could be for both industries, and how, you know, is this a front runner for that kind of convergence?
Oh yeah, massive. It's hugely exciting. Yeah, and again, music and gaming, the integration of music and gaming has been around a long, long time. But, I think what's exciting now is how music is beginning to get integrated into social gaming. Roblox has been around for 16 years, actually, a long time. But music is still not being established properly on the platform. And there's a huge number of issues around that, around rights, blanket licenses and things like this. And, I think it will get to that place at some point. But yeah, boomboxes, I think, is just a really good step in the right direction. Do players want to listen to an ad supported music player whilst they're in an experience in Roblox? Who knows? Possibly not. But again, I think it's a really good step in the right direction. It's beginning to bring well known commercial popular music into surfacing into the place where young people are spending time. They chose Times Square because it's the biggest artist experience on the platform, 75 million visits. So there's a huge amount of engagement there that they can tap into, basically. But yeah, I think it's more exciting to think about actually how music will become integrated into social gaming in the future, because there's lots of different ways that, again, a player listening to music in a kind of normal way, I'm not sure is the most exciting thing. People that've got their Spotify playlists and their YouTube playlists, and that's how they kind of listen to sort of music generally. But I think it's more thinking about, we get excited by playable music experiences and playable music events. Not just replicating music events in a virtual world, but how to make them playable and native to the actual platform, and then you think about adaptive music and interactive music, music that's responding to what you're doing in the platform, I think artists and labels are open to that kind of creative sort of approach or collaborative approach will reap the benefits, I think. And it's like music creation tools, there's some talk on the various platforms. We've seen Fortnite actually launch their own suite of tools at the end of last year, and they've got a big focus on music. They want Fortnite to become a music discovery platform. I'm really excited by where this can go, but I think it's just thinking about the ways in which it can be integrated basically that excite me most.
Yeah, it's such a wealth of opportunity in there. Like you said, 75 million people are using Twice Square, so it's an easy thing to want to get involved in for that level of engagement to see what you can do. Matt, where do you see the opportunities in this convergence of music and gaming?
I think it's a real win-win for both the music and gaming industries. Obviously, it's representative of an ongoing acceptance that from music publishers that gaming can be a really powerful channel. We've seen the likes of live concerts within Fortnite, within Roblox, have millions and millions and millions of viewers and millions of engagement outside of the platform in terms of watching it after, talking about it with friends, and really creating a real buzz about the space that hasn't necessarily been seen otherwise. And obviously the combination of music with other media channels, that's already well known to be a powerful tool. Obviously TikTok's success in part is due to the acquisition of Musical.ly, which allowed users to use those licensed soundtracks for those videos. Obviously nowadays it's talked about pretty much purely short form video platform, but actually it was that integration with music that actually really allowed that success to spike. It's the fact that we've got major artists covered in this deal. It's a step forward. I think obviously it's not quite to the point of, say, like a pure play music player such as Spotify, where you've got that near ubiquity of tracks. But the fact you've got so many major artists engaging with Roblox in this way is kind of representative of just that recognition of that it can bring so much to both the music and the gaming side of things.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up on, you mentioned TikTok there. And obviously Universal Music Group have had their recent fallout with TikTok. Their artists are no longer featured on the platform. Can this kind of move, is this reactive from Universal trying to find the next big thing? Now they're off the current big thing. Can this help them mitigate that move away from TikTok? What do you think, Matt?
I think it's obviously a recognition that Roblox is an incredibly valuable platform for music and film promoters, given its user demographic. As Tony touched upon earlier, it's that younger demographic that's using Roblox compared to TikTok. I think it's the majority of TikTok users are now in that 18 to 34 bracket, whereas Roblox, it's that younger sort of 9 to 18 bracket. I think retaining those users as they age is going to be the main challenge for Roblox, but if they solve that, they're looking at the TikTok for the future. So I think it makes sense, regardless of the dispute with TikTok, it makes sense for Universal Media Group to be getting involved with Roblox. Obviously, in terms of the specifics around the spat with TikTok, which led to them withdrawing the artists, not necessarily, opinionated enough to form a view on that. But in terms of how I think just coming back to the point, it's a recognition that Roblox as a platform is incredibly valuable. UMG clearly felt they're not getting that value from TikTok, and I think they're trying to now get their foot in the door with a younger demographic.
Yeah, and Tony, do you think that's, it sets an interesting, almost an interesting precedent for the music industry in terms of that despite TikTok's utilization and how powerful it can be, that it's not the be all and end all. Do you think this is a strong move for Universal and Republic?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much they're related actually. I think, for sure, I think Roblox and TikTok have got a similar issue it's the challenge of, blanket licenses, that Roblox are showing no kind of indication that it's something that they want to pay for, to a blanket license on the platform. But Universal clearly recognising the opportunity of reaching these hundreds of millions of young people and experimenting with ways in which they can do that in a commercial way. I think it's on the TikTok side of things, I think it's they're different platforms, right? TikTok was very much, as you said, a platform built upon music, similar to almost like a Spotify. It's a music based platform. TikTok was a platform that's built upon music. Roblox, it doesn't need blanket licenses. It doesn't need music in order to, keep growing. They're not kind of willing to pay the hundreds of millions it would cost to, get blanket licenses in place with major labels and publishers and what have you. So I think they're kind of, different issues basically. I think it's, this is a really good experiment by Universal to sort of begin finding ways of commercializing music on Roblox. And who knows where it will go.
Cool. Well, we'd be sure to keep a keen eye on it, and we'll have you back in a few months and see what progress has been made and where we're at. That is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Tony.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me on. It's been great.
Oh, great to have you. And Matt, thank you as always.
Absolute pleasure as always, John.
And thank you all for listening. As promised, we're going to play you out with the AI-created Digital Revolution by ExchangeWire, hopefully heading to the Billboard 100 someday soon. Thank you all for your time. Take care. Yo, it's a digital revolution, ad tech evolution. Changing the game, no solution, we call it confusion. Algorithms and data, we the kings of this industry. Targeted ads, we be increasing your efficiency. Analyze your behavior, track you across the web. We know what you like, what you need, what you dread. Programmatic advertising, we the masters of display. Real time bidding, making money every day. Ad tech.